Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin'.
Welcome, everybody. We appreciate you joining in with us again another week. It's Monday, November 8th, and we put that at the top of the program just for those of you that are downloading and listening to this program. You know which program you're listening to. We welcome all our regular listeners as well as so many new listeners that are dialing in or logging into the website and listening to us each and every week. If you have not already done so, I encourage you to head over to Lickin' on Lending, www.lickinonlending.com, and register for the weekly emails that announce our upcoming programs. And in that, we'll be talking about all the guests we have, what we're going to go, we're going to be talking about this week. And so we are excited this week to have Glenn Corso, the co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project. He is located inside of the Beltway, and folks, with the landscape shift, the tsunami that took place in the House and a significant number of seats in the Senate, we got a lot to talk about, which is really the topic of what our program is going to be today, talking about what does all this mean when it comes to the mortgage industry. A lot of things starting to come out about it, but we got the guy in the know. Don't want to put too much pressure on him, but we got the guy in the know that knows what's going on. Glenn, we're looking forward to having you on here shortly. But as we do each and every week, let's start off and talk about what's going on with interest rates. Joe Farr, welcome as you are. Bring it to us each as you do each and every week.
Well, thanks. Today's not a lot going on. MBS prices are down just a little bit. We should have the results of the two-year Treasury auction in just a few minutes. So, you know, just been kind of a quiet day. But, boy, it's nice to have a quiet day for a change after last week.
After recent volatility, weeks of volatility, yeah, no kidding.
Man, last week we had three huge issues. We had the election results coming out, and the Fed decision both came out on Wednesday, and then the jobs report came out on Friday. And last week we had a lot of movement, both just seemed like every day there was a lot of pretty significant price changes, and quite frankly, at the end of the week, it was all for not very much change. I mean, that result was about a quarter point change in MBS prices, which is almost an indistinguishable change in rates.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you think of going back on the week, Monday and Tuesday were both volatile as all the uncertainty about the election and what the QE2 was going to be. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute.
Yep.
QE2.
Quantitative.
But the Monday we had a I don't remember if it was a big loss or a big gain, but it was completely reversed on Tuesday. Wednesday we had a little bit of a muted reaction. It was kind of like, I guess, everyone was tired. And then Thursday we improved, and Friday, when the jobs report came out better than expected, we saw prices fall back down again. So net for the week, it was about a 8/32nd improvement in prices, which is a quarter point in price and less than that in rate. But did see a nice improvement in the stock market. If you own if your 401k, if you looked at it, it's going to be a little better today than it was then, beginning last week. So let's talk
very
about
nice
QE2.
We
mentioned QE2.
Yeah, go ahead.
We mentioned QE2 last week, and I've used it a lot, and a couple of listeners had kind of said, you know, help me to get a better concept of what QE2 is. And so
yeah,
I don't know if this will work.
Some of those who think that QE2 is is the name of the queen, the boat, the Queen Elizabeth II. I actually saw that, Joe, in one of the commentaries. It said, no, we're not talking about the Queen Elizabeth. I mean, that cracked me up because that's one of those who have watched some of the shows that's what their first thought was. So anyway, yeah, break it down for us. Give us a little some of the basics.
Well, first of all, the Treasury has to issue securities to raise money to fund the government, all right? And what quantitative easing is the at this point, the Fed, not the Treasury, and think of them as two different entities. The Treasury is issuing debt to raise capital, to raise funds, to fund the government. And the Fed is now going to become a buyer of that, of those Treasury securities. So essentially the Fed's going to print money and then give that money to the Treasury to pay for the government's cost. And by the Fed doing this, I mean, they've announced a month in Treasury securities. They're essentially telling investors, hey, we're going to buy all this stuff. Prices are likely to go higher, which means yields are likely to go lower. And in the end, this is not going to be a very attractive investment for you while we're doing this. So it's a great way for investors to say, well, if they're going to get in there, I mean, a lot of investors got in there beforehand knowing that Treasury prices were going to go up and they're going to now sell them for a profit. But this is a great reason for investors to now consider other investments, whether it be corporate debt, whether it be investments in people and machinery and companies, and because Treasuries are going to be considered or going to become less attractive investments. And so the benefits of this, if it works as expected, is that those investors with money aren't going to be buying Treasury securities. They're going to be investing in other things, which should generate some better economic activity.
We should stress, Joe, that in theory, because as you pointed out in the pre-call, this is uncharted waters. This particular monetary policy has never been employed to this degree before. Am I correct in that statement?
Well, you know, they kind of did it last year. March with the MBS purchase program, and quite frankly that didn't do what it was hoped to do. It did reduce rates, it did reduce MBS prices and mortgage rates, and that had some benefit to the economy. As we all know, a lot of people refied and they had more money to spend on other things, but it didn't do a lot to stimulate growth. And so they're trying it again, and so if it does work, it'll stimulate growth. It will likely reduce long-term interest rates, again, to the point where investments aren't very attractive to those if you're only earning a small amount. But to the mortgage industry, it could mean, quite frankly, a lot of the mortgage rate consequence of this has already occurred. You know, we saw a nice improvement since August. So don't know how much more there is ahead of us for that. And then
Go ahead. I got another thought I want to throw in there. I don't want to get too much of it because we'll get more into this when we get into our general topic. But one of the questions that just begs to be asked, we already have people in here buying this. We've encouraged, the Feds were in with a monetary policy of buying up all our mortgage-backed securities, and then they said, no, we're going to back off. And now they're like almost setting up a policy where we're driving away the very investors that we want to make sure stay actively involved in this. I know the theory of quantitative easing is the intent is to get people investing in other aspects of the market. Free capital up, get it in here. But it didn't work to the full extent the way they intended the last time. I wonder if there's a healthy amount of skepticism is still somewhat in order here.
Well, certainly there is. And, you stop China's addiction to treasury investments. They become addicted to someone else. That could have significant long-term consequences. Quantitative easing is a short-term fix. It's a short-term stimulus. And the hope is that it improves economic growth, it improves employment, it causes some inflation. The biggest fear of all, Dave, is what happens if inflation gets out of control. And they want some inflation, but they don't want too much inflation. Can they control this thing? As soon as as the dollar becomes weaker due to this quantitative easing, imported items are going to be more expensive. Lots of things are going to cost more, and so they're going to achieve what they want. It's just, can they stop it when they want to stop it?
As you mentioned, it's
a new deal, and we'll see how successful it is. There are a lot of people for it and a lot of people against it.
Well, certainly we're going to find out, and we'll save some of the discussion about that going on. What's on the economic calendar coming up this week? I know you talked about the treasuries. We're all waiting for that, the 3-year treasury. We got some other treasury auctions coming up later, tomorrow, do we not?
Well, one today, actually. It just was announced. I think it's 2-year two or three year treasury auctions. 3 year treasury auction just happened, and it was an average result, average bid to cover, and average indirect bidding. So not a real significant influence on the market, but you wouldn't expect that so much out of the 3 year as you would for tomorrow's 10 year and being the most significant, and then a lesser extent on Wednesday, the 30-year. But other than the Treasury auctions tomorrow and Wednesday, there's not a lot of consumer sentiment on Friday. But just after last week, let's just all take a little, hope it's a quiet week for a change.
Yeah, no kidding. Hopefully so. Got anything else for us that we need to talk about? I can't wait to get more into the quantitative easing a little bit later in the segment. But anything more, Joe?
No, that's it.
Well, so good. Appreciate you bringing this to us each and every week. And I'm cheating right now because I'm in the embassy quote line looking at the notes here. It's pretty valuable stuff. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. And remember, we've got Glenn Corso to talk about what is going on or what it all means, this election result. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Lickin, and we bring each and every week to you the traffic report. What's going on in the legislative update? And boy, I tell you, as a result of the election, there are going to be some changes. Alice, I know there's not a lot changed, but give us kind of a rundown of what we need to be focused on. And then I can't wait to get Glenn on to dive into it much, much bigger, much deeper into this part of it. So, Alice, bring it on.
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, Dave, hello, everybody. The election for the legislative side meant we had a little bit of a chance to catch our breath. Although one thing that did happen, actually, the date of the announcement came out on November 3rd, was that we did get extension for financing for the rural development program. So that was good news. Although you do have to have your heads up now that purchase loans are subject to a 3.5% upfront guarantee fee, and refinances will be subject to the 1% guarantee fee. So they now have the financing is available for fiscal year 2011 under a continuing resolution. Now, also following up, just to get everybody on what you have to pay attention to in November here, on November 15th, the comment period is going to close for the advertising rules. So those of you who do a lot of advertising on your website, or maybe you're doing a lot of, still some type of print or email marketing campaigns, make sure you go through that rule and check out that everything within your ads is above board and you're giving full disclosure. You're not representing yourself, to be an entity that you're not. And really just double-checking the rules and setting up policies and procedures for record retention. So check this rule. Comments are going to close on November 15th. Make sure you're going to be happy with the way that wording comes out. We also have a comment
period closing.
That's
a biggie. For those that are advertising, I want to underscore that one. There's a lot of more people doing consumer direct. Pay attention to that one. Sorry, Alice, for interrupting. I just wanted to highlight that.
No, that's fine. The comment period for the new truth in lending form is going to close November 23rd. This really is just expanding the table within the till. So right now you see, 359 payments at X number and then one payment at the final dollar amount for a 30-year fixed rate loan. Well, now it's going to happen for the adjustable rate loans is it's going to expand to show worst case scenarios and actually have three columns. Here's what your rate. Here's what your payment is now. Here's the worst case scenario based on today's index. But here's worst case scenario based on the caps. So, and then the good faith, the tills are going to have a statement that says no guarantee to refinance somewhere on there. So, the till form is going to be getting a revision. Double check that comment period, November 23rd. Make sure mostly it's an IT system issue as well for implementation date. Sometimes you have to read these things and you read the rule and you say, okay, that's not so bad. I think I can live with that. But is my LOS provider ready to roll this out when the due date may be coming?
Don't assume. Don't make assumptions. Double check with them.
Yeah, exactly. Also, the proposed rule changes for the lender insurance program, comments are due actually in about a month, so December 7th. That you really want to spend time with your compare ratio for this rule that's going to be coming out. FHA is proposing to change how they look at the compare ratio. And so those of you who are regional lenders, you'll want to be able to take a look at what is my compare ratio in each of the states that I do business in, and how will I come out under FHA's new guidelines. So your compare ratio needs to be within the 150% threshold. And for those of you who may not be familiar with compare ratio, it's what is my percentage of delinquent loans in as a company. So, for example, if I have a 5% default rate on my FHA loans and the national average is 5%, then I have a 100% compare ratio. I've used loan numbers there just in hopes of that we'll get down.
That's good. And it's important for people to know where they can go look that up or where there's at. I'm surprised at the number of people that are in the HUD program are unaware of even how to look up that. Do you want to give that a reference real fast?
Sure. In Neighborhood Watch actually has a public view as well. So when you go to, for those of you who have an FHA connection ID number, you can access your Neighborhood Watch, your compare ratio information from FHA connection. But for those of you who are just interested in what this means, you can do a search in your favorite search box window and put in Neighborhood Watch public view. And that'll be one of the first links that comes up. And you can look up any lender to see what their default rate is.
Check up on the competition. That's not a bad place to go.
Yeah, yep. So this compare ratio in the lender insurance program, read through this, because the MBA, I actually have a committee meeting tomorrow again. We're working on a response to this. We're playing with all the numbers. Lenders really need to say, how is this going to impact me? Those of us in states with very, very high default rates are going to be impacted by this rule change in comparison for FHA. So we have lots of rules, comment periods that are coming up close, and so everybody needs to pay attention to that. The bills, real quick, that we do want to keep an eye out for is we're still watching for finalization of the red flags rules and having that make its way all the way through Congress to say, okay, we definitely have to have all these red flags rules in place, and that's still technically pending.
Interesting. Man, keeping it all mapped out for us and having GPS or, these LoJack systems on all these bills moving through, that's the only way you and your staff can stay on top of it. Alice, thank you so much for keeping on top of and tracking the progress of each and every one of these. Anything else that we need to cover?
No, I think that'll get us for now. I know we want to make sure that we have plenty of time to talk with Glenn about, the future under our new Congress here.
Yeah, it's so exciting. And, folks, if you haven't heard by now, you just dialed in. We've got Glenn Corso, who is going to be with us. He is the co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project. Gosh, so excited to get him back on. He's no stranger to the program. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break. We're going to be back with the Profit Doctors, so don't want to miss that. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality trainings throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Monday, November 8th, and we've got the Profit Doctor. He has been out making house calls this last week. He was out working with a number of shops and looking at that, and we're so excited because he brings us something each and every week. Last week he brought us about how all the shrimp boats sank and why this is such an outstanding opportunity to be in mortgage banking. Andy Schell, also known as the Profit Doctor, welcome to the program. What do you got for us this week?
Well, thanks, Dave. Appreciate that very much. Yeah, we were out last week, and it was gorgeous, pretty countryside. And, you know, in thinking about some of the things that are going on, I thought about, you know, what's a few $1 billion among friends, you know, when all, you know.
Sounds like some senators.
Yeah, well, you know, Dave, if you and I are out and we want
entitlements
to have lunch, you know, it doesn't matter who pays because, you know, it just doesn't matter. So same thing, what's a billion among friends? Well, I wanted to talk about some of the battles you face in making decisions. And let's start with quality versus quantity. Okay, we all face this decision. We may not necessarily overtly think about it, but okay, think about this. I'm standing in the grocery store, standing in the Safeway here in Austin, looking at the ice cream freezer. Okay, there's a gallon of Safeway chocolate ice cream, and for the exact same price, there's a pint of Ben and Jerry ice cream.
Okay? That's
which
a conflict.
Is better? Which is the better decision? You
well,
go for quantity, Dave, or do you go for the quality?
You know, it maybe depends on how long the drive home is.
Well, you know, shopping for ice cream, whether if you get high-quality ice cream or a bunch of ice cream, is, you know, like shopping for mortgage banks.
Yeah.
We're out shopping for mortgage banks for investors. And, you know, let's say there's a $3 billion mortgage bank that makes $9 million a year and a $5 billion mortgage bank, so bigger mortgage bank, that makes only $10 million a year, so you got a bigger mortgage make just making just a little bit more. Which one's better? Well, you know, you think we could take the smaller company and make it bigger to preserve the margins, or we could take the bigger company and improve the margins. So, you know, this is the challenge. Well, you know, the reality is there's much more to this. It's a lot about timing. And here's another side note. You know, Dave, here in Austin, every March, we have South by Southwest. It's a big music festival where bands from all over the country come to Austin. And some of the bands aren't the best at managing their money, and they aren't the best at planning necessarily. So the bands, you know, get all their money together, drive to Austin because they're going to perform at these various clubs and get discovered. And it's true. A lot of bands have gotten discovered at South by Southwest. So they get here, and the festival's over, and they're ready to go home, and they reach in their pocket, and there's not enough money for gas. So what they do is they take their equipment over to the local pawn shops and sell it for pennies on the dollar. So the best time to pick up music equipment in Austin is right after the music festival. Because these
bands, all about timing.
It's all about timing. So I like music equipment, so I'll go and pick up some equipment now and then. So buying it's about timing. It's about understanding the metrics. But it's also about being in the right place at the right time. You got to be at the pawn shop after the festival because that's when the most equipment for the best deal is there. So now moving over a little bit more sophisticated now, let's talk about value drivers. When I was at B of A in San Francisco, that's the old B of A, the pre-Nations Bank acquisition B of A, I managed correspondent lending and loan accounting, where one of the key elements was to track and measure the value drivers. Now, we had to integrate mortgage accounting from all over the country, from different systems, to create a single report. It was very challenging. And among value drivers, you know, one just to look up sometime, Google this sometime, economic profit and economic value added. Those are some fairly sophisticated.
That's a normal Google for the average mortgage banker, I'm sure.
Yeah, Google that. It's great party talk. Hey, what's your economic value added? You know, I don't know. I've got lots of economic profit.
I've been to a lot of parties. I'm not sure that's what's been discussed there. Maybe it should be. I'm going to the wrong parties, Andy.
Well, okay, value drivers. In mortgage banking, we think about value drivers. We normally think about things like volume and margins and operational efficiency. So we want more volume, bigger margins, and more operational efficiency. So like we were just talking about, if we're going to buy a company, do we want a $1 billion volume company or a $500 million company? You know, a lot of people will say they want the bigger one. Almost always mortgage bankers will say, I want the bigger one. Well, there's more to it, though. What if the $1 billion company is losing money? Or what if the underwriting process is not well managed and there's lots of pending repurchases? See, so there's a lot to this. It's not just volume.
More is not always better. That gallon may not be the better deal.
Exactly. It's just like a grease pit or a septic tank company that empties septic tanks. More, sometimes less is more. It's good to have less sometimes. So, but in mortgage, in business, really the bottom line is the bottom line. The key value driver is net income. So we want to have good net income. And one of the ways to get better net income is to have operational efficiency. Okay, so operational efficiency. Let's talk about that just for a second. So does it make sense to try and close every single loan? Well, what if the probability of closing a loan is 5%? Should you push it? What if it's 30%? What if it's 50%? At what level of probability do you push the loan through? And, you know, here really is the essential question. How much money does a mortgage banker make when a loan doesn't fund?
Yeah.
Kind of like that commercial, is it woodchucks chuck? How much wood can a woodchuck chuck?
Yes.
How much money can a mortgage banker make when a mortgage loan doesn't close? If a loan doesn't fund, you make nothing. So the trick is you want to only touch files that close. Well, you know, that's hard to do sometimes, but you can put probabilities on funding. You can, when you're working with a customer, you get it into processing. If it's not going to go anywhere, then you get it through underwriting quickly, or you follow the rules, and Alice is going to jump in here any second. I can feel it coming. She's going to remind everybody, follow the rules. From an accounting perspective, though, I can tell you that it costs payroll, it costs space, it costs facilities to have a bunch of processors and a bunch of underwriters when not all the loans are funding. If you've got a 50% fallout, track this sometime. You know, a lot of people track their pull-through from lock to fund. Track your pull-through from application to approval. And I'll bet you that you're looking at 30, 40, 50% fallout from application to approval. That's an important metric to manage. And if you are at 50%, then you've got twice as many people than you really need if every loan would fund. So you got to focus on getting the loans, only touching loans that will fund. You follow all the rules. You got to do it right. But that is going to make your company much more efficient. Using technology to help with this helps as well. But that's the deal. When you're out,
that is good.
You know, if you're going to buy a gallon of ice cream, you got to make the decision. You want a lot for less or less for better quality. Same thing in
You know what, Prophet Doctor? I think we got a new name for you. You're the master of metaphors. I'm telling you, we went from grocery store and ice cream to South by Southwest to septic tanks. Only you could pull all that together into a cohesive Prophet Doctor segment. Outstanding.
Well, thanks, Dave. Thanks, Dave. Just focus on the metrics. ROI is king.
More is not always better, and you're not going to make it up in volume. Excellent, Andy. Thank you so much. We appreciate that. And it's always good to get a little perspective from the Prophet Doctor, and also known as the Master of Metaphors. Very good. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break. You're going to want to stay here because...
So the big news from last week was the Fed's announcement of $600 billion more in quantitative easing purchases. There are lots of stories about it in the news, but the posting that really caught my attention came from Chris Martinson at www.chrismartinson.com. Chris is one of the most insightful analysts I've come across, and if you aren't familiar with his site, you should be. He points out that the news lately has been very positive. Retail sales are up, existing home sales are up, auto sales are up, jobs are up. So with all this good news, why is the Fed stepping in now? Chris suspects that things actually aren't as rosy as they appear. This is a short read that'll make you think. And if you haven't seen Chris's free online video presentation called The Crash Course, you should take the time to watch it. It could literally be the most important educational experience you have. Again, the site is www.chrismartinson.com. The other story that leaped out at me was by Julie Sato of the New York Times about the potential introduction of covered bonds as a new financing tool impacting the mortgage industry. Covered bonds have been popular in Europe for hundreds of years, but would be a new instrument here in the States. Julie explains how they are essentially like mortgage-backed securities, only they are kept on the issuer's balance sheet. There's a fair amount of legislation that will need to be put into place before this becomes commonplace, but I suspect based on our history and where things are heading, they will likely become popular. You can learn more about covered bonds by reading the story available at nytimes.com. Just search for the term covered bonds. Those were the stories that caught my attention this past week for the Mortgage Minute. This is Rob Katz with DMD, and I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. I really enjoy what Rob Katz does each and every week is go out there, and he spends a fair amount of time perusing through all the publications and bringing in those stories that we can't possibly get to in this program. So, Rob, thank you so much. Again, if you guys are not familiar with Del Mar Data Track, go over to the website dmdinc.com and check them out. Folks, we are so fortunate again to have back someone who is familiar to this radio program. We've had him on many, many times before. He's a good friend and someone I've come to respect and turn to when I'm trying to sort out all that's going on in the industry, especially when it relates to the legislative initiatives. I'm just so thrilled to have Glenn Corso on the program again with us today. Glenn is the co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project, an advocacy organization representing independent and community mortgage-based banking companies, and includes some of the community banks as well as the independents, a great voice that's filling in a much need, a big need in the industry. And Glenn was, by the way, the former senior vice president of the PMI group. He has over 30 years of experience, 33 years of experience, probably 34 by the time this is written, in the mortgage banking industry, specializing in government relations and public policy. Glenn, welcome to the program again. We appreciate you being here and bringing to us an update and your perspective of all that's going on in the industry, especially as a result of this tsunami of election, this major reversal. Welcome to the program, Glenn.
Well, thanks, Dave. Thanks very much.
It is, without question, the Obama administration was, and I guess Pelosi, was sent a clear message that what they've been selling hasn't been playing so well in Peoria or across the country. We have seen a major shift and the political landscape. And Glenn, we appreciate you again bringing it to us and kind of giving us a rundown of all that's going on. Let's kind of talk about one of the things, if you wouldn't mind getting into the midterm elections and kind of talking about some of the things going on. Certainly one of the biggest changes is in the House Financial Services Committee, as well as some other chairs, other committees throughout the House and the Senate. Would you get into us and give us a breakdown now of what seats are going to be, what seats were given up, and chairmanships and all of that good stuff?
Sure. So right now the House Financial Services Committee has 71 members, and it's broken down between 42 Democrats and 29 Republicans, and that basically reflected the makeup of the House, at least prior to the election.
Right.
Just keep in mind also that this current House of Representatives will actually stay in intact until January 3rd when the new House comes in. So the old House is coming back for a post-election session next week. It's designed to last 1 or 2 weeks or something like that. They've got a little unfinished business to attend to. So that'll be the former representatives that are all showing up, and they don't officially lose their seats until early next year, those that lost. Anyway, the Financial Services Committee has 71 members. Definitely getting a new chairman with the shift in control from Democrats to Republicans. There'll also be a big shift, of course, in the makeup. And what we're anticipating right now is that there'll be about 40 Republicans on the committee. So instead of 42 Democrats, there'll be 40 Republicans. And then there'll be 31 Democrats as opposed to the 42 that we have right now, plus a new Republican chairman. Now, about 10 of the Democratic members that are on the committee right now lost their reelection bids. So in terms of having to downsize the Democrats, really a lot of the work has already been done for them. They've already been downsized by the voters from 42 to 32. So you're probably going to see one other Democrat who will lose their seat on the committee and have to look elsewhere for an assignment.
Is that a fire truck that we hear in the background running
yes,
over to the
I'm
House
sorry
trying
about
to put out
that.
The fires going on in the Democratic in
we,
the House?
After we rented this office, we found out that there's a fire station right around the corner. That son of a gun, we just hadn't noticed.
We can't wait to get an update on all that's going on. But continue on, because now let me ask this: when you're talking
sure.
about specifically the House Financial Services Committee, the 71 members that are going in the dynamic and the shift. Than the population there, with the fact that some of the Democrats that were there, that were on this committee, are not even returning after the session. I mean, I think it's noteworthy to point, as you did, that they will be coming back for a lame duck session here, a very, very short amount of time. Not a lot's going to happen during that time, at least I would assume not. I guess we should stop there. Do you think anything significant is going to happen in this lame duck short-term session?
Well, originally the lame duck was called for two purposes. Number one, to address the financing of the government, because before Congress adjourned for the elections, they passed a short-term financing bill, and that financing bill will expire, and so they need to address how do you keep the government running until at least next year and possibly through the end of the fiscal year. The second thing is that it was commonly expected that they were going to address the whole tax cut issue. As you know, the so-called Bush tax cuts expire at the end of this year.
Right.
That's right. And the estate tax as well. There is no estate tax in the United States today. As of January 1, the estate tax reverts to what it was back 10 years ago.
Right.
And so the lame duck session was supposed to address that issue. There's a lot of maneuvering and jockeying going on right now with President Obama indicating that he is willing to compromise to some extent on his demand that that the tax cuts for everybody making $250,000 a year or less be extended permanently, and that there be no extension for persons making over that amount. The Republicans are insisting on a permanent extension for all the tax cuts, no matter what your income level. And so whether or not something's going to get done, or whether, in fact, the Republicans decide, gee, let's wait until next year when we're in control of the House and we have more members in the Senate and we'll be in a better position to drive the bargain that we'd like, rather than in this lame duck session where the old percentages, the pre-election percentages, still apply. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yep.
The risk that the Republicans run, obviously, is that if you start January 1 with the old tax rates, up until that point and until they get something done, people don't know what their tax rate is. They may hesitate to make certain various financial, economic, business decisions, et cetera. That's a concern. On the other hand, you have President Obama and the Democrats thinking taxes are a strong point for the Republicans, not a strong point for them. So isn't it better that we get this done now rather than put it off till next year? So,
yeah.
Stay tuned on that one.
One of the biggest changes that's going on is, especially in the House Financial Services Committee, is Barney Frank now having to go from the leader to minority status. How does that play in specifically? Let's start focusing in now on the mortgage industry and some of the consequences for that. And we're going to get the rest of our panelists come in on some of these points here in just a minute. But is that something that's significant? A lot of people for the first time, we were shocked. The fact that there was even a chance of him not coming back. It looked like he could lose. There was some polling going on that gave some indication. The fact that he lent, as a $200,000 to his own campaign spoke to the desperate nature of his election. But now that he's back, what do you think about what are the consequences? Should we be reading anything to the fact that he's moved or will be moving after the first year to minority status?
Well, it's going to be a tremendous change. The reason is that Barney Frank is one of these larger-than-life figures. Whether you love him, hate him, or are somewhere in between, The fact is that he has gotten quite a bit done in terms of getting the legislation he wants through the committee, onto the House floor, and then through the House of Representatives. I think it's fair to say that, by and large, the mortgage provisions in the Dodd-Frank Act were largely the provisions that Barney Frank got through the House Financial Services Committee and got the House to adopt, whereas other parts of the bill are much more a mix of the Senate and the House provisions. But most of the mortgage provisions, with a couple of key exceptions, were straight from the House of Representatives' version of the bill. So he's been very effective in that regard on the issues that are of most importance to us and to our audience. Whether you like what he did, didn't like what he did, it's hard to dispute the fact that his point of view has at least over the last couple of years prevailed as far as legislation that's been enacted into law. So it will be a big change. Spencer Baucus is the person that many people feel will become the chairman. Now, there's a little caveat to that, which is that Ed Royce, Representative Ed Royce from California, he announced last week that he was going to stand for chairman of the House Banking Committee. There is a feeling in some quarters that Spencer Baucus, who is a conservative lawmaker, to be sure, but he's not any what anybody would call a real firebrand. That he may have trouble standing up to Barney Frank. And the feeling is that Baucus, for the most part, is a fairly courtly, polite southern gentleman, very effective guy, very smart guy, but he's not quite the rabble-rousing type that Barney Frank is, and Barney Frank is most people would acknowledge, a very good debater.
He's no question about it. And is Ed Royce, the Republican from California, more apt to be a better match to offset the debating ability of Barney Frank?
Ed Royce is a very good debater in his own right. He is a very outspoken member of Congress, and he has gone toe-to-toe with Barney Frank a number of times. And the feeling is that he would be, at least from a rhetorical standpoint, a better match for Barney Frank than Spencer Baucus. On the other hand, there are many who see Spencer Baucus as a guy who can really kind of build a coalition within the Republicans and figure out how to really make his side stay in line and get behind whatever it is that he's pushing. So the thinking is he would be potentially a more effective tactician as far as keeping the Republicans in line and making sure that they're passing what they'd like to pass.
Glenn, I feel like I'm hogging the mic here, and I want to bring in our panelists, but I want to go to a quick break to honor your old employer, PMI. So, folks, we'll stay tuned. We're going to be back with this important discussion. We'll be right back after this brief break.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower, from a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges. PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Lincoln with Lincoln on Lending, and we have as our special guest Glenn Corso, the co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Projects. He is now relocated from out in PMI country, where the headquarters are out there in California, back into the Beltway. He used to live there, and he's back in that because there's so much going on. Glenn, we are so excited to have you on the program. Alice and Joe and Andy are all going to line up, but I'm going to turn to and put the mic, toss the mic over to Alice first thing. Alice, jump in here. I know you have a lot of comments and a lot of questions for Glenn. Go ahead.
Yeah, Glenn, you know, you mentioned in your segment about, you know, that as this moves forward, we're going to see maybe different parts of it that will get looked at as we have new leadership in the banking committee. So I guess, is there an order? We could talk about the two that are most important to us, obviously, and that's risk retention and loan officer compensation. Do you think either of those two have any likelihood of getting some attention and any revisions being made?
Great question, Alice.
Yeah, so Alice, I think there is some chance for revisions on both of those issues. The thinking is right now that the Republicans, if they had their way, would just as soon repeal Dodd-Frank altogether. But
yeah, and most of the mortgage banking community would be right there supporting him, cheering him up.
Right.
I think that there's a rule in debating 101 where that's not going to work.
Yeah, but what I was going to add is that I think most people would say that they really don't think there's much of a chance of that happening, because you do have the other body, which is the Senate, and plus the fact you have Barack Obama sitting there as president, and I doubt that would be something that he would go along with. So short of that, there had been talk about a technical corrections bill, and the thinking among a number of people I've talked to is that there will be a very robust technical corrections bill put forward, perhaps stretching the boundary of the term technical corrections, and hopefully we can address particularly loan officer comp, where I've spent countless hours on the phone with various of our members who are genuinely concerned that they're no longer going to be able to compensate their loan origination personnel according to profitability. And that's something they're very concerned about, because, frankly, that's what makes their business go. And so I think we hope that we can get some additional flexibility built into the rule so that people still will be able to compensate on the basis of profitability at the very least.
That is such a good point. And, boy, Alice, you nailed it with those two things. We'd love to see the whole bill repealed. Andy Schell, I know you've got some thoughts about what's been going on and some questions for Glenn.
Yeah, hey, Glenn, just real quick. What Alice asked about was really important about the Dodd-Frank repeal. And, you know, what's interesting is that with the technical correction bill, there may be elements in there that you said they'd like to push. Well, hopefully they'll read the correction bill just like they did the health care plan and not read the bill at all. That way they can push through whatever they want. What I'm wondering about, though, is, you know, we've got Fannie and Freddie. We've got the Housing Finance Organization, the GSEs. How do you see this change in the House affecting what happens with the GSEs over the next 2 years?
So I think there probably the picture isn't quite as positive, Andy. By that I mean that we think that the election has really diminished the odds that anything is going to get done with respect to figuring out what entity or entities or structure is going to succeed the GSEs. I think that most people in Washington feel that the GSEs are not going to survive long term, that both the House Democrats and Republicans and the Senate Democrats and Republicans have all decided that the GSEs at some point need to be wound down and dissolved. Long-term prospect, of course, that won't happen in the space of a year or two or even several years, but I think that's the path they see. But what will take their place is, of course, the big issue. And the Republicans have such a radically different view than the Democrats on that, where the Republicans basically want to put Fannie and Freddie into receivership and just let the free market take over mortgage finance completely. The Democrats obviously feel that there needs to be some kind of continued government presence and some kind of government structure to assure that there's a flow of mortgage funds, particularly during times of financial crisis. So those two views are so diametrically opposed that it's hard to see that in the next couple of years they'll be able to reconcile those views and actually move something forward to take the GSE's place. So what we see is the status quo continuing until beyond 2012.
That is interesting, and that's kind of what I would anticipate. And don't look for any major changes there, but it's nice to know someone inside there, inside the Beltway, shares that sense. Joe, jump in here, and we were talking about quantitative easing, QE2, and I'd love to get Glenn's thoughts on that. But anything else that you have for Glenn for some?
Well, just to follow up on what we were just talking about, you begin to read things by Republicans that are in the House saying that they can accomplish things by simply not providing funds for it. As I think I'm correct in saying, all spending measures begin in the House. And Glenn, is there any concern that they might do that as it relates to needing to fund Fannie Mae's, Freddie Mac's demands or needs for capital?
Well,
great question.
Yeah, Joe, great question. And to be honest with you, and I'm sure this is causing more than a few Republicans to grind their teeth, that is really beyond their control because it's an agreement between the Treasury Department and FHFA, where the Treasury Department is buying preferred stock in the in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and that's the way they're really continuing the flow of funds to those two organizations. So the Republicans would need to actually change the law that the Treasury is operating under, and the idea is that even if they could get that through the Senate, that undoubtedly President Obama would veto it.
Yeah.
And, well, and therefore blocking a change.
I guess, too, because that bill that you're talking about passed like a year and a half ago?
Yes.
I mean, a fairly long time ago. and now it's proving to be very effective. And I think as an industry, we need to be somewhat happy about that, given how disruptive it could be. Things did happen to Fannie and Freddie.
Well, that's true. I mean, Joe, I'm sure that you and a lot of listeners have seen the stats that show that somewhere upward of 95 or 96% of the mortgage market is either FHA, VA, or going through Fannie and Freddie. And so from that standpoint, we all hope that the private sector and the conventional market comes back, the non-government segment of the market. But there's not a lot of evidence of it right now.
Yeah. Do you see a tsunami of regulation continue to come at us, or is this abated now with this change? Or is it like we're just going to have a chance to breathe and digest all that's out there?
No luck, no. Unfortunately, quite the opposite. We have seen already. We've seen obviously the Federal Reserve Board appraisal regulations, which no doubt you've talked about in earlier programs. The SEC has come forward with two sets of regulations, one on representations and warranties from originators, the other on the reporting of repurchase requests and whether or not the originator has complied with the request, and and now we're also talking about risk retention regulations, which the agencies are supposed to come out with sometime before Thanksgiving. So unfortunately, this is just the start of lots and lots of regulations between now and I'd say sometime around the end of next year.
Alice, it looks like your segment's secure, Alice. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. But, Glenn, when you talk about the regulations coming out, I guess a big part of these are coming out as rules. Is that correct? So people do have a chance to read kind of the procedural aspect of how they're going to be implementing some of these things and then be able to respond in a comment period.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, Alice. I should have made that clear. So that's a great point. All of these, the rules I mentioned, the Federal Reserve rules on appraisals were sort of the exception to the rule in that Congress mandated that they come out with these interim rules that are effective very quickly, and you have a time to comment, but nonetheless, the Federal Reserve is sort of moving ahead quickly. With these other rules that I've mentioned, they'll be issued in proposed form. People will have a chance to comment and make their case heard, and then the final rule will come out with an implementation period that we hope will be more than adequate for the industry to make the changes necessary to conform.
Yeah, and since so many of the proposed rules have to have some procedural aspect to them, at least a little bit of that, do you see that we really have to get the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau up and running a little bit more before some more of these will come out, or they're just going to keep running with it regardless of where the Bureau stands right now?
Well, here's what we've heard. We've heard that the Treasury Department, which is sort of the incubator for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, has been quarterbacking these various rules proposals. Under the law, though, until the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau actually comes into existence, which is in July of 11,
right.
Many of these rules can't be issued. For instance, the rules all about qualified mortgage and ability to pay, and frankly, another wave potentially of loan officer compensation rules. All of these will be coming from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And until it comes into an existence, it can't propose rules, clearly, and obviously it can't put those rules in final form either.
We got to get you back, Lynn. We're getting kind of short on time, and I want to definitely take a few moments to talk and get an update about what is going on with the Community Mortgage Banking Project, something that you co-founded. If there was ever a time where a voice needs to be heard, and a voice for the independent mortgage bankers and those that are bank-based companies, the smaller, which there has not been the representation of, which you, I think you go after, it's now. And we're thrilled to have you exist. Give our listeners a quick update in the time we have remaining about what has changed and the developments within the Community Mortgage Banking Project.
Well, Dave, since we last talked, we've grown to 40 members, and as you said correctly, they are all independent mortgage banking companies. We have, I think, three members that are actually subsidiaries of very small banks or bank holding companies, but for the most part, independent mortgage banking companies that are either family-owned or owned by a group of partners, located all over the country. And the thing that they share in common is that they feel they've been very successful in their business, very successful in primarily originating conforming loans and FHA VA loans, and they really are very focused on remaining independent and continuing to serve the consumers they've worked with.
That is so good. It's great to hear that it's growing. If people want to learn more, where can they go to learn more about this project?
We have a website, www.communitymortgagebankingproject.com.
Folks, you need to go online and go check this out. It is so important. We need to raise this membership to literally hundreds upon hundreds of people out there need to be a part of this. This is a group that's advocacy group for the voice that hasn't been heard sufficiently in there. Glenn, thank you so much for coming on the program again. We got to have you back soon. It's been way too long, Glenn, and we've got to have you back. And I think based on the dialogue here, we're just really getting into some great things. And there's so much to talk about on this topic. So we appreciate you being here with us and your willingness to always come back and be a part of the program. Thank you, Glenn.
Oh, well, thank you, Dave. Take care. Bye-bye.
Greet everybody over there from us, would you please? Look forward to it. Folks, we're thrilled to be with you each and every week digesting what is the hot topics of the industry. Remember, you can go to www.lickenonlending, L-Y-K-K-E-N, onlending.com, and register for the weekly updates. Also, while you're there, check out the other valuable things that are there at the Housing Matrix website, which is kind enough to host our Lickin' on Lending project right now. Sign up for tips, tools, and tricks. There's some great other resources out there. Check them out as you go to the Lickin' on Lending to register for the program. We appreciate so much our guests regular guests being on each and every week. Go out, check out their websites. A special thank you to Glenn Corso again and the Community Mortgage Banking Project. Folks, have a great week. Next week, we're going to be talking about the value of owning a bank. We appreciate you being with us again next week. Have a great week, everyone. Talk to you soon.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.